You're listening to 90.1 KPFT Houston.
90.1 KPFT FM HD2 Houston.
This is Basil, and you are listening to Interspectrum on KPFT Houston. This is a special edition of Interspectrum, focusing on the 2008 financial crisis and how it fundamentally reshaped society. The post-2008 recovery process changed the way younger generations live, think, and work. Hopefully this edition gives you a special insight into the way that the 2008 financial crisis has affected younger generations. And you can also look at this on YouTube by searching Unspoken Consequences of the Housing Crisis.
2008 was a tumultuous year for the economy. The housing market collapse created one financial crisis after another, and it often seemed as if the news could only get worse.
If you are watching us from the last home you'll ever own tonight, consider yourself lucky. Same goes for anyone ready to buy a slice of the American dream.
Nearly $2 trillion tax dollars have been shoveled into the hole that Wall Street dug, and people wonder, where's the bottom? It turns out the abyss is deeper than most people think.
The 2008 housing crisis, the Great Recession, the second largest hit in the global economy since the Great Depression, a financial disaster so huge that nobody mentions it. Well, they do, but only as if it was another typical chapter in their life. Nobody talks about how fundamentally society changed, economically, socially, psychologically, and politically. Millions of people lost their homes and jobs, yet the transition back to quote-unquote normal life was completely different than it was before, with those effects still being felt today. The degradation of the U.S. economic, social, and political climate since the 2008 housing crisis and Great Recession is very apparent. I believe that the Great Recession / 2008 housing crisis has forced millennials, Gen Z, and future generations to live in the world as a trauma response to the failure of the 2008 economy and its lack of substantial recovery methods. There are numerous economic, social, psychological, and political consequences of the crisis that have structurally affected future generations and continues to affect many aspects of society, such as the previous generation's notion of work, social and community interactions, and economic stability and growth. To introduce the severity of the unspoken consequences of the 2008 housing crisis, we need to first talk about the origin and known effects of the crisis, specifically as it relates to the economic choices many companies and the government made to recover and prosper after its occurrence. The reason for the 2008 housing crisis can be attributed to investors looking to find a way to make low-risk, high-reward investments. Noticing how the interest rate that was being paid on U.S. mortgages at the time was higher than many other investment opportunities, many domestic and foreign investors decided to put money in the U.S. housing market. But instead of dealing with individuals, financial institutions securitized mortgages, bundling thousands of them and selling the shares to investors, making it much more feasible to invest. However, these mortgage-backed securities weren't bundled with just good credit borrowers. They were also bundled with subprime mortgages. Around the time people were investing in the U.S. housing market, the need to acquire more mortgages was required, since that's the key word in a mortgage-backed security. But the only way to get more mortgages out was to begin relaxing lending practices, which meant offering low interest, $0 down payment to people of all walks of life.
Well, my firm offers ninja loans. No income, no job. You know, I just leave the income section blank if I want. Corporate doesn't care. These people just want homes, you know, and they go with the flow.
Good for you.
These mortgages were known as subprime mortgages, since the typical borrowers of these mortgages were those with no credit, bad credit, unstable income flows, or even low-income individuals and families. Additionally, banks began offering collateralized debt obligations, CDOs, which were basically taking all of the risky investments and bundling them to appear more appealing to different types of investors. Thus began the cascade of handing out mortgages and allowing the price to rise, to then sell the house, mortgage-backed securities, or CDOs with a grossly overestimated mortgage as the buy-in price. And because the pricing for housing was continuing to grow, the cycle didn't stop there. This was compounded with the fact that most of these mortgage-backed securities and CDOs were labeled as AAA by credit rating agencies, the highest rating that a credit investment can achieve, since it means that it is without any risk of default. So, On the outside, it seemed like the U.S. housing market was booming. But in reality, it was becoming a growing Jenga tower of subprime mortgages, bundled into mortgage-backed securities and CDOs, all to be bought with no real system to regulate the speed of its growth, creating the housing market bubble. And just like any bubble, one day, it pops. People begin to realize there are more houses out for sale than there are people who can buy them. So the prices for houses that just sold for $700,000 are now worth half of that. And since the pricing for housing started to decrease, people began to default on their mortgages, causing the value of all those mortgage-backed securities to decrease as well. And because the securities lost their value, investors started to sell what they had to try to save their profits, feeding into the downward spiral of the bubble. This housing crisis, or 2008 financial crisis, technically was the first sign of what would lead into the global Great Recession, which lasted for 18 months from December 2007 to June 2009. However, the immediate economic impacts of this were apparent and far-reaching. The Lehman Brothers, the fourth largest banking institution at the time, filed for the biggest bankruptcy in American history. And the largest insurance company at the time, AIG, needed to be bailed out, following a group of other banking and financial institutions known as the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act of 2008, or the Wall Street Bailout. With the bailout of major financial institutions getting paid literally billions of dollars to stay afloat, it exposed to the American people that the system didn't care for them. But more importantly, it revealed how deeply the economy depended on housing as its foundation. The original purpose of the Wall Street Bailout was to allow the banks to receive money and utilize it to lend again, first with other banks, but then back to the people, restoring liquidity across the system. The Troubled Asset Relief Program, or TARP, administered by the United States Department of the Treasury, allocated over $400 billion to stabilize banks and financial institutions during the crisis. However, many of the banks that contributed to the collapse were not only stabilized, but positioned to expand, as seen when J.P. Morgan Chase acquired Bear Stearns in 2008, and later took over Washington Mutual, the largest bank failure in U.S. history. Similarly, Bank of America acquired Countrywide Financial, one of the largest subprime mortgage originators, and later Merrill Lynch, further consolidating financial power during the crisis. Rather than distributing capital outwards, these actions concentrated assets within the very institutions at the center of the collapse. During the banking crisis, it wasn't just individuals who were caught up. Corporations and businesses rushed to take out credit lines and loans to bolster liquidity while the financial sector stabilized. According to a Harvard study, this 2008 bank run was instigated by short-term creditors, counterparties, and borrowers who were concerned about the liquidity and solvency of the banking sector, highlighting how trust collapsed at every level of the economy. As confidence evaporated and financial institutions tightened lending, the routes for the average person to access capital, as individuals or small business owners, began to close rapidly. In 2008 alone, over 200,000 small businesses were closed due to the housing crisis, signaling that the collapse of housing was not isolated, but instead triggered a broader economic contraction that spread across every sector. With many small businesses, especially at their inception, home equity has historically been a major factor in their success, acting as both collateral and a financial safety net. To quote from a Federal Reserve essay titled Small Businesses and Small Business Finance During the Financial Crisis and the Great Recession, while the financial endowment needed to start a small business rose during the crisis period, the ability of housing net worth to provide that endowment declined. This quote highlights a direct link of the collapse in housing prices to reduce entrepreneurial opportunity. What this reveals is that when people attempt to create financial stability and growth, household equity and net worth are not just advantages, they are requirements. As millions of people lost their homes during the housing crisis, the ability to leverage property for upward mobility was severely limited or eliminated entirely. This loss of leverage meant that individuals could no longer use their homes to start businesses, access credit, or weather financial instability, fundamentally changing how wealth could be built. In 2023, 99.9% of all U.S. firms were small businesses, underscoring how critical access to personal capital is for economic participation at scale. Without housing as a financial anchor, millions were and continue to be effectively removed from the pathways that had historically enabled economic advancement. Because the capital from the bailout did not meaningfully return to households, but instead recirculated within financial institutions, the lifestyle that emerged after 2008 is fundamentally different from the one that existed before. Rather than restoring broad access to credit, the post-crisis environment became more restrictive, more risk-averse, and more favorable to those who already held assets. This shift also contributes to the growing conversation around the quote-unquote wealth gap, often framed as boomers versus millennials, but can be more accurately understood as a divergence in access to leverage. For example, while boomers had a median net worth of approximately $16,000 between ages 25 and 29, millennials held around $18,000, suggesting similar starting points but vastly different trajectories. The difference emerges in what those generations could do with that income, where boomers were purchasing homes at roughly 3 times their annual income, while millennials faced home prices closer to 5.5 times their income, drastically limiting access to ownership. Median home prices also increased significantly, from approximately $165,000 for boomers to $370,000 for millennials, further reinforcing the barriers to entry. What this shows is that the system did not just recover, it recalibrated around asset ownership, privileging those who already had property while raising the barriers for those who do not. All of this leads to one of the most significant long-term economic consequences of the housing crisis: the erosion of economic mobility across generations. Prior to 2008, the labor market and housing market operated in tandem, where stable employment could reasonably lead to stable home ownership and long-term financial growth. Before the crisis, approximately 90% of people searching for a job were able to find one within a year, reinforcing a system where stability was attainable and predictable. However, in the post-2008 economy, that number has dropped to as low as roughly 70%. In addition, the nature of employment has shifted toward contract, temporary, and part-time work. As job stability declined, the feasibility of committing to long-term investments like home ownership also diminished, creating a feedback loop between unstable work and unstable housing. This shift meant that the traditional model of working long-term at a single company, building toward retirement, and anchoring that life around home ownership was no longer viable. As a result, those who retained assets, primarily older generations, were able to recover and grow their wealth, while younger generations are forced to rebuild without the same foundational tools. The outcome is a financial system where recovery is not evenly distributed, and where the ability to build wealth is increasingly determined not by effort, but by whether one had access to housing, knowledge, and assets at the right time. And when this access to stability collapsed, the effects didn't stop at the economy. They reshaped how people lived, interacted, and understood their place in society. All of the economic strife that is a result of the housing crisis is having a major impact on younger generations and ties into the first real unspoken consequence of the housing crisis, the societal markers that are being strained. This can be seen with the major social division between all generations, the apparent stagnation in millennials and Gen Z, and the breakdown of communities and social cohesion. The most immediate social consequence of the housing crisis is the growing division between generations, particularly between baby boomers and every other generation. While older generations were more likely to have purchased homes before or shortly after the crisis, younger generations entered adulthood in a market defined by higher prices, tighter credit requirements, and reduced access to ownership. According to data from the United States Census Bureau, home ownership rates for people aged 30 to 34 dropped from around 50% in previous decades to roughly the low 40% range for millennials, highlighting the measurable gap. This disparity has fueled a broader cultural narrative of who had it easier, often framing economic struggle as a generational conflict rather than a structural shift. This division has made it more difficult to build consensus around good economic and social solutions for the country, as each generation operates from fundamentally different economic and social realities. Beyond division, the housing crisis also contributed to a widespread sense of social stagnation among millennials, Gen Z, and even emerging Gen Alpha. Traditionally, milestones such as moving out, buying a home, getting married, and starting a family marked progress into adulthood, but these benchmarks have been significantly delayed or disrupted. Reports from the Pew Research Center show that a growing share of young adults now live with their parents well into their late 20s and early 30s, reflecting both economic pressure and limited housing access. When stability becomes uncertain, decisions about careers, relationships, and personal growth are often postponed or abandoned altogether. This will create generations that are not unwilling to progress, but structurally unable to do so at the same pace as those before them, and where the transition into adulthood is no longer clearly defined. The housing crisis also played a significant role in weakening community ties and social cohesion, particularly as housing stability became less attainable. According to the Joint Center for Housing Studies of Harvard University, renters are significantly more likely to move within a short period compared to homeowners, contributing to a more transient population. When individuals cannot remain in one place long enough to establish roots, communities become less stable and less interconnected. According to the Pew Research Center, 45% of 18 to 29-year-olds felt at least somewhat attached to the communities, while 64% of 50 to 64-year-olds fell in the same category. This lack of attachment in the younger generation creates environments where people are physically close, but socially distant, where the sense of belonging that once defined communities becomes increasingly difficult to sustain. Without access to stable housing, the ability to build stable lives begins to fracture. As financial and social effects begin to bear down on future generations, the true starting line for many people has shifted. Prior generations relied on a better system of assistance with intergenerational wealth. By having this system where they had a consistent home to go back to and family cohesion to assist with any setbacks in life, individuals and communities could grow and flourish. With more and more communities having a growing lack of cohesion, future generations will have a compound disadvantage of reduced upward mobility and a growing dependence on their family background rather than individual effort to grow. One of the most significant effects of the lack of intergenerational wealth caused by the housing crisis is the reduction of upward mobility for younger generations. As millions of families lost homes during the 2008 financial crisis, that pathway was disrupted, leaving many without a financial foundation to build upon. According to the Federal Reserve, housing has historically made up a substantial portion of household wealth, meaning its loss has long-term generational consequences. Additionally, the Federal Reserve reported that a significant percentage of renters reported that reasons for renting instead of owning were because of the inability to make the down payment, the inability to afford mortgage payments, and the flexibility of renting. Without this inherited stability, younger individuals are more likely to start from a position of financial vulnerability and financial burden, relying solely on income rather than accumulated assets. This creates a compounding disadvantage, where each generation must rebuild from scratch rather than advance from previous generations, slowing overall social progress. Over time, the absence of intergenerational wealth transforms inequality from a temporary condition into a persistent structural reality, where upward mobility becomes increasingly difficult to achieve. Another major effect is the growing dependence on family background as a determining factor in financial outcomes, rather than individual effort or achievement. Research from the Pew Research Center indicates that wealth disparities between families have widened over time, reinforcing the importance of inherited resources in shaping life outcomes. This shift highlights that two individuals with similar education and income levels can experience vastly different trajectories based solely on their family's financial background. The idea of merit-based advancement becomes less attainable, replaced by a structure where opportunity is unevenly distributed from the start. This dynamic reshapes societal expectations, as success becomes increasingly associated with prior access rather than personal progress. It also provides the divide between those with and without access to housing and assets. The housing crisis changed who gets to inherit it and who has to rebuild it. As the list of effects that were caused by the housing crisis continued to build, another unspoken one arises: how people think following it. The psychological impact on people is the major reason for the massive changes in how people earn their money and interact with each other, especially with the younger generation. The crisis forced young people to develop a fear of failure, lack of personal confidence, fear of taking calculated and or creative risks, and prioritizing short-term gains for morality. One of the psychological consequences of the housing crisis on younger generations is a heightened fear of failure and a corresponding lack of confidence in long-term decision-making. Homes were lost, savings were wiped out, and careers were disrupted, creating a lasting impression that security is fragile and temporary. According to the Pew Research Center, younger generations today express lower levels of financial confidence compared to older cohorts at similar ages, reflecting a shift in how risk and stability are perceived. This environment fosters a mindset where failure is not seen as a learning opportunity, but as a potentially irreversible setback. This erosion of confidence limits upward mobility, not just economically, but psychologically, as individuals begin to self-select out of opportunities they might otherwise have pursued. The same fear of failure and instability that affects careers also extends into personal life, where relationships are increasingly viewed through a lens of risk rather than growth. In a 2025 survey, 44% of men reported being afraid of initiating contact for fear of being labeled creepy. And in a different study, it was found that those in a higher socioeconomic status had more satisfying and longer-lasting relationships than those of lower socioeconomic status. So, pursuing a serious relationship or starting a family is no longer just an emotional decision, but a financial calculation tied to housing affordability, job stability, and long-term security, suggesting that uncertainty has become a defining factor in personal decision-making. At the same time, the prioritization of work, particularly among young women, reflects a broader psychological adaptation to instability, where independence and financial security are seen as prerequisites for any future relationship. In an EDU Birdie survey of 2,000 women, 59% ranked professional and financial success as a higher priority than finding love or starting a family. Down the line, this creates generations that do not reject traditional milestones like marriage or family, but instead postpone them indefinitely in pursuit of conditions that may never fully materialize. Closely tied to this fear of failure is a broader decline in the willingness to take creative or calculated risks, particularly in career and entrepreneurial pursuits. Historically, home ownership and stable financial footing provided individuals with the confidence to experiment, whether by starting a business, changing industries, or investing in long-term ideas. Data from the Federal Reserve shows that the net worth of younger households has not increased significantly compared to that of older households, reducing younger generations' capacity to absorb potential losses. On one side of the coin, this shift has led to some acquire safer and more stable paths, even if they offer limited long-term growth. On the other side of the coin, the housing crisis caused the increasing prioritization of short-term gains over long-term or ethically driven decision-making. According to research from the American Psychological Association, financial stress is strongly associated with reduced long-term planning and increased focus on immediate needs. This can be seen with what caused the housing crisis in the first place. Financial institutions trying to make short-term gains with a surefire, low-risk, high-reward system in the housing market. Younger generations may feel pressured to accept roles, business practices, or financial strategies that prioritize survival over principle. I believe this is what has led to the significant and exponential growth of prediction markets, sports gambling, and AI slop content. These short-term and flexible financial markets are a possible escape from financial insecurity at the expense of preying on human morality. The result is not a lack of values, but a restructuring of priorities in response to sustained economic pressure, where a sense of economic freedom takes precedence over idealism. The housing crisis changed expectations, creating generations that no longer plan for stability, but adapt to instability. With all these consequences stacking up, it leads into the final one, the one that started and keeps the system of financial, social, and psychological distress in perpetuity. The politics behind it all. With no faith in the system that is supposed to work for them, people after the housing crisis came to a strange new reality, one where political divisions are exaggerated and the American dream is no longer the road to success. One of the lasting political consequences of the housing crisis was a deep and persistent distrust in both the financial system and the institutions meant to regulate it. The collapse revealed widespread risky lending practices, yet many of the largest institutions were stabilized through government intervention rather than dismantled or fundamentally restructured. Under the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act of 2008, billions of dollars were administered by the United States Department of the Treasury to bring banks and financial institutions back from the brink of bankruptcy. While these actions were intended to prevent total economic collapse, they created a perception that large institutions were protected while everyday individuals absorbed the consequences. At the same time, relatively few high-level executives faced legal repercussions, and many of these institutions consolidated and grew out of the crisis, reinforcing that belief that accountability was unevenly applied. This imbalance contributed to a growing skepticism toward both financial systems and the political system that oversees them. The housing crisis also intensified political polarization, particularly along generational lines, as different age groups experienced the aftermath in fundamentally different ways. Older generations, who are more likely to own homes or recover asset value over time, often view the crisis as a severe but temporary disruption. In contrast, younger generations entered adulthood during or after the downturn. According to the Pew Research Center, the wealth gap between education levels has significantly grown between generations, which has a huge impact on shaping political priorities and outlook. These differing realities have contributed to diverging beliefs about economic fairness, government intervention, and the role of institutions in protecting the public. This divergence can also be observed in how different groups interpret high-profile events involving corporate leadership and wealth. Reactions to the deaths of figures such as Stockton Rush following the Titan submersible incident reveal a divide in public sentiment where many focus less on the executive's loss of life and more on the broader implications of risk, privilege, and accountability. Or with the Luigi Mangione case, where an average person took a course of action that seemed to attack the system of insurance head-on by killing a quote-unquote leader in that system, Brian Thompson, the CEO of the number one insurance company in the U.S. These reactions reflect a growing perception that corporate leadership operates under a different set of consequences than the general public, a belief that traces back to the aftermath of the 2008 crisis and the visibility of large-scale bailouts. What one group sees as tragedy, another may interpret it through the lens of systemic imbalance or long-standing frustration. These differences compound, making it more difficult to establish shared narratives around fairness, responsibility, and reform. The housing crisis, of course, did not create these divisions outright, but it fully accelerated the separation and exposed them, leaving behind a political environment where generational perspectives are often incompatible. This divide makes it more difficult to implement cohesive policy solutions as each generation advocates from a different economic, social, and psychological reality. The most symbolic political consequence of the housing crisis is the erosion of the idea of the American dream, particularly the belief that hard work leads to stability and upward mobility. For decades, homeownership was considered a central pillar of that dream, representing financial security, personal achievement, and psychological independence. Data from the United States Census Bureau shows that homeownership rates among younger adults remain significantly lower than in previous decades. With time, the American dream transitions from a widely shared expectation to a more uncertain and selective outcome. The political consequences of the housing crisis do not end with distrust or division. They evolve into a system that sustains and reinforces itself. According to the Pew Research Center, trust in government and major institutions has declined significantly since the late 2000s, with only 17% of individuals thinking that the government will do what is right most of the time, compared to 31% in 2008. This decreasing belief in the competency of leaders reinforces the perception that accountability at the highest levels is no longer guaranteed. In the absence of that accountability, power is continually recycled among those already within the system. And without a place of stability with a meaningful connection with their local community, many younger generations are left in a it's-so-over mindset when it comes to making an impact in the political sphere. And because these divisions shape political priorities, they also shape policy outcomes, making it increasingly difficult to implement the very changes that could resolve the inequalities created by the crisis in the first place. The 2008 housing crisis is often remembered as a moment the economy fell and then eventually recovered, with no real recollection of the depths of its impact. But what remains largely unaddressed are the deeper consequences that never fully healed, the ones that reshaped how different generations live, think, and connect. While markets stabilized and institutions regained strength, the recovery for everyday people, especially younger generations, was unfair, incomplete, and in many ways, quietly ignored. The lifestyle that emerged after the crisis did not rebuild what was lost. They redefined the difference in lifestyles between those who had access to housing stability and those struggling to attain it. And because that shift has never been fully acknowledged, its effects have been allowed to compound exponentially in silence. What we are experiencing today is the continuation of a crisis, a structural transformation that never fully corrected itself. If the consequences of the 2008 housing crisis are to be meaningfully addressed, the focus must extend beyond economics and politics. It must focus on the softer skills of society. It must focus on the social and psychological realities shaping younger generations today. Generations raised in instability do not respond to opportunity the same way as ones raised in security. They hesitate and oftentimes resign before taking the chance. That is why the solution is to restore the conditions that allow growth. More spaces for children to explore and fail, more opportunities for adolescents to build real social connections, and more accessible entry points for young adults to take economic risks without irreversible consequences. These are not just lifestyle improvements, but are foundational to rebuilding confidence, creativity, and long-term thinking in future generations. Because if stability is the foundation upon which people build their lives, then rebuilding that foundation is not optional. It is necessary.
Hopefully you enjoyed that special edition of Interspectrum and also learned a little something about the 2008 housing crisis. Thanks for listening. And for the rest of this segment, we'll just be playing out music so you can enjoy the fact that we have reached our fund drive goal. Thanks for all the contributors who had donated to KPFT and our fund drive for making sure that we keep public radio alive. And thank you very much for listening to Interspectrum tonight. Have a good one.
is the front face your mom will appreciate.
Isn't it terrific? watching the leaves falling in. Think it was something like a dream.
What you think?